Well, we're almost at the end of the year. 2020's been an amazing, interesting, challenging year that we'll never forget. And maybe you're wondering what's ahead for 2021. Maybe you'd like to know what other property investors are planning to do. Well, that's exactly what we're going to discuss in today's show as we unpack the results of the annual Property Update Property Investor Sentiment Survey. You'll hear what 1,500 Australians feel about the current real estate markets and what they plan to do. You'll also hear what COVID did to their property plans and how, if at all, it changed their strategies. And to discuss this year's survey, I'm joined by Brett Warren. And as usual, I'm going to share a mindset message with you because if you change your way of thinking, it could change your life. So welcome to today's episode of the Michael Yardney Podcast.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropol, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
I know my mindset messages are amongst the most popular segments in my podcast because I get the most great comments about them. And I normally run them at the end of the show, but today I'm going to start with a mindset message. I'm going to discuss with you the big difference between the winners and losers. And then, in a moment, I'm going to have a chat with Brett Warren about the 2020 Property Investor Sentiment Survey, where you're also going to hear what some winners, and I guess some losers in the property market, are thinking as well. You see, over the years, I've had the privilege of working with some very successful property investors, some successful business people and entrepreneurs, but I've also met many not so successful investors. And I found that in general, people fall into one of two groups. There's those who make excuses and those who don't. The ones who make excuses don't start off in life that way. No one's born talented at making excuses, but over the years, they learn to get out of things. They learn how to blame the economy, their parents, their teachers, the system, pretty much anything that they can deflect the blame on. This gives them the excuse they need. And then there is that other group of people who don't make excuses, or rather won't. Look, we've all got our difficulties, we've all got our challenges, and some days we feel like making excuses. But winners stop themselves. They don't make excuses. They just get on with the job. Interestingly, we all have similar capabilities. Yes, we've got similar capabilities to get things done or not, or to make excuses about it, I guess. So when you wake up in the morning, you get to choose which route you take. Now, I recently read this insightful quote. The difference between successful people and unsuccessful people is that smart people hate doing the same thing that unsuccessful people hate doing, but successful people do it anyway. The successful people hate doing the same things that unsuccessful people do, but they do them anyway. So as you go in this journey we call life, you're going to get the chance to back out and make excuses or not. You have the choice. Has the coronavirus-induced recession affected you? Are you considering moving and living in a different location because of COVID-19? Maybe the pandemic's changed your investment strategy, your approach to property investing. These are some of the COVID-19 related questions we asked about 1,500 Australian property investors or would-be investors in our annual property investment sentiment survey. And some of the answers were enlightening. Now, it's Australia's longest running and largest survey of Australian property investors. It's about 50% more people responded to this survey. We had over 1,500 people than to the other big surveys. And it shows insights from, well, property investors and would-be investors. And I've been running this, Property Update's been running this, Metropol has since 2011. And it's been interesting to see the trends. So if you're wondering what's ahead for 2021, you're going to enjoy today's podcast because you're going to hear what 1,500 Australians feel about the current property markets and what they're planning to do. And to discuss this year's results, I'm joined by Brett Warren, National Director of Metropol Property Strategists. Hi, Brett.
Hi, Michael. Good to be with you.
Well, Brett, before we get into the nitty-gritty of the results, let's have a quick look at them. Some of the surprising ones were that more people than ever, 74%, believed it was a good time to invest.
Yeah, well said, Michael. I think it's about time we started on a positive. It's been a bit up and down this year. So I think that's a great result, a really positive result, particularly when you consider it's only been growing over the last 3 or 4 years. I know in 2017 that figure was around 59%, 18 was 52%, and last year was 68%. So, you know, 74% is a great result, and 50% of respondents actually said they were planning to buy investment property in the next 12 months as well, and that's actually up, you know, from 42% last year. So some real positives to start with, Michael, and I guess, you know, perhaps we can work through each question as we go.
Okay, well, why don't you read out the questions? I'll give a bit of a summary and we'll have a talk.
Fantastic. So the first one is, how many investment properties do you currently own? And I guess the average there is around two properties for the majority of Australians, according to the tax office. But the investors here, we've got an average of around 3, 3.2, and that's probably not a surprise, Michael.
Well, what happened was we surveyed the subscribers to Property Update and your investment property magazine. So it wasn't necessarily the average Australian. It was people who were already interested in property. So sure, if you surveyed the general population, we know that only 2 out of 10 families have an investment property. So the majority of these people did, 12% didn't have properties. And interestingly, it ranged from 20% owning one, 19% owning two, to still 5% of the group of people who responded to the survey owning 10 or more properties. So it's an interesting spread of people who've got a serious interest in property, Brett.
Excellent, Michael. And I guess next up, we're looking at where these investment properties are located. And if we read the numbers out here, they're more than 100%. But what we're actually referring to, because people will have multiple properties in different locations, and Melbourne's in the lead there at about 36%. Second up was Brisbane on 34%. Interesting, regional at 32% and then Sydney at 27%. Then it drops down to a few of the other capital cities. Any thoughts or surprises there, Michael, for you?
Well, I was surprised that a third of people, or people owned a third of their investment properties there, because there was, as you say, some people owned multiple investment properties, a lot of them did. So it depends upon what their investment strategy is. But as we dig deeper into the results, we'll get a better understanding of what they are aiming at. If they're looking for capital growth, they're more likely to go to the big smoke.
Certainly. Our next question is, if you don't own an investment property, how long have you been planning to invest or researching to get into the market? Clearly, the majority of people in the survey do own an investment property. And for those that are looking at researching, it's anywhere from 6 months to 2 years, which is probably understandable in the current market, Michael.
Sure. Some people are putting off their decision. Others are waiting to get finance. So again, we had a wide breadth of people, and 1% weren't even interested in investing, but at least they took the time and trouble to leave an answer, which is good.
Yep, absolutely. The next one is, are you a rentvestor? Do you rent but own an investment property? And I think, probably 5 or 7 years ago, the term rentvestor was probably not even around, Michael. So we're probably starting to get this a bit more popular, particularly as our capital city prices grow and people are probably priced out of certain markets.
Sure. People have recognised that if they can't afford to live and own a property where they want to live, they may as well rent, enjoy the lifestyle of a good location, and invest elsewhere. So it is a trend, and 50% of people said that they would consider rentvesting as a strategy as well. So while 18% were currently rentvestors, others thought it's not a bad idea. Makes sense to me.
Right. The next one, and a really topical question, I guess, is, are you considering moving to a different location, to live in a different location because of COVID-19? And that's quite topical at the moment. And overwhelmingly, 90% of respondents said no, which is incredible.
Well, I think people were searching on the internet. People were looking. It was a good idea, especially if you lived in Melbourne, where we've been locked up for a lot longer. Obviously, we're free to move around now. So I was surprised also. I thought a bigger percentage of people would consider moving. 90% said they wouldn't consider moving. But when asked where would they consider, interestingly, the biggest number of respondents was only 3%, because remember, most people weren't going to move. But a third of those who were planning to move thought they'd move to Queensland. Now, being a Queenslander, I bet you've got no issue with that. You know it's the best place in the world.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, being locked up, I can certainly understand that with the beaches and the lifestyle and the weather up here. So, yeah, certainly.
And only 2% of those responding said that they'd move to regional Australia. Interesting. So it may seem like a good idea, but COVID was stressful. Being locked down was stressful. Having a pandemic or a recession is stressful. But moving house is stressful also. So it's not something that you do lightly. But it was interesting to dig in further to see why people would want to do that. And most of them were looking for a better lifestyle when you asked them a couple of questions down the track. The next question was, what's your preferred investment strategy? And it was interesting to see, Brett, that 50% of people talked about long-term capital growth, 20% said buy, add value, and then hold for the long term. Long-term rent and positive cash flow was about 18% of people. 3% said they didn't have a strategy. Now, that's interesting because I think if you went to the general population, remember we're speaking to or asking questions of a reasonably educated population because they get my newsletter every day, they listen to our podcasts. Only 3% didn't have a strategy. That's good. I'm pleased about that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think the other question to ask, Michael, also is the good thing, obviously, we're seeing people holding for the longer term. That may be a strategy, but I guess it's important to dig a little deeper with those people as well to understand, although they're holding for the longer term, what is their strategy and is their plan and are their assets performing correctly? So that's probably a little bit of insight there as well.
Sure, because the next question then was, well, are you negatively geared or are you positively geared? And I was surprised. I shouldn't be because it's much the same every year. 36% had positive cash flow from their property portfolios. Now, remember, we asked 1,500 people, 90% of them own an investment property, and many of them own 2, 3, 4, 5 properties. And many of them, as we get down to later on and see their age, they were been in the investment game for a while. So they'd moved out of the growth stage. A lot were getting cash flow. 31% were negatively geared, 23% neutrally geared. Interestingly, 9%, 1 in 10, didn't even know their cash flow position, which means they weren't really treating their property investments like a business.
That may be a concern. It may be an opportunity cost or an opportunity for someone to look into that a bit deeper.
So the next one was interesting. We asked them, do you believe now is a good time to invest? As you said, Brett, 74% said yes. This is more than this time last year. And remember this time last year, it's hard to remember this time last year, so much has happened this year. We'd come out of the election and the property markets all around Australia were booming. That scary bogeyman of negative gearing disappearing and all those other tax lurks disappearing had gone. So the property markets were doing well. And last year we were excited when 68% of people thought it was a good time to invest. But this is what we call a leading indicator. Sentiment leads, goes before action. So this is just one of the other things that's going to assure us that 2021 and 2022 are going to be good years in property, Brett.
Certainly is, and especially with the interest rates dropping again, Michael, and after loosening some of the regulations, I really see that you know, that driving our market and driving people to change things over. So the next one is, again, we talked about the pandemic and has the pandemic changed your strategy or approach to property investing? Interestingly, 65% say no, and a good thing, I guess, is 23% are more cautious, which I think is a good sign. It's probably dangerous to be going off a gut feel and, you know, following the latest trend or trad. It's probably a good time to be being a bit cautious and taking a step back and assessing your longer-term plan and the facts and numbers about where you want to get to.
That's a good point. Only 6% said, yes, I'm worried about the future of property investing. Again, we're speaking to an audience who are more property savvy, and I guess they realised that this was a short-term pause of our property markets rather than a long-term downturn.
Yeah, particularly now the media claims and 40%, 30% drops are well and truly behind us. And as we saw the other day with CoreLogic coming out suggesting that we're starting to see the rebound in prices.
Sure. Interestingly, we dug down a bit deeper to see how did COVID affect them. So it didn't affect their long-term plans, except they were a bit more careful. But we asked them, have you applied for a mortgage repayment, either for your home or your investment? And we know that a lot of people did. And interestingly, 10% said yes. Now, that's in line with what the banks have said also, that 10% of borrowers have asked for a mortgage holiday. We didn't ask the next question, have you actually started repaying? But we know from statistics that have come out from all the big banks and from APRA that a lot of people who did ask for a mortgage holiday are now back to repaying their loans. And there have been very few mortgage defaults. So it was actually good to see that our survey of quite a wide sample was in line with what others have found as well. But the next question was, have your tenants requested a rent reduction? And unfortunately, 24% of landlords had noted that.
Yeah, about a quarter. 10% didn't apply for a holiday. So perhaps it wasn't not paying rent. Perhaps there was just a substitution there or a period of time where they were able to absorb that cost.
Yeah, sure. So the last one, based on the COVID questions, was has the pandemic affected your immediate investment plans? What are you planning to do in the next 12 months? More than half of the people said no. 20% said, I'm going to pause. I'm going to wait till the situation becomes clearer. And that's a reasonable answer unless you've got the depth and experience that we had where we knew, hey, yes, it makes sense to pause. That's what everyone else is doing, but you shouldn't really be doing what everyone else is doing, should you? 14% said, no, I'm actually going to hop in.
Yeah, 14% see it as an opportunity, which is great. But certainly pausing the investment plans, I think I saw a statistic the other day suggesting only about a quarter of people in the market at the moment are investors. And I think that number will become stronger as, I guess, the waters start to clear a little bit and there's a bit more certainty around and investors get a bit more confidence.
So then we ask the question I'm always interested in, are you planning to buy an investment property in the next 12 months? And 50% said yes. So that's more than in previous years. So they're confident, they're taking a long-term view, they think it's a good time to get in. And the fact that 30% said no doesn't mean they don't think it's a good time to get in, but it's not the right time for them because of their life cycle or finances or things like that.
Yeah, particularly if they've already got portfolio and they can't potentially buy anymore. And then there's the remaining 20% who aren't sure, and they may be made up of those investors we looked at before who are still waiting for things to straighten out, I guess.
Well, it was interesting to then to ask what type of property are you planning to buy? And again, I keep coming back to the fact that these are more educated, sophisticated investors, because if you ask the general public, we'd probably find a bigger portion would be wanting to buy off the plan because they saw it as a way of getting in with no money down. But only 3% of the respondents, 48 people, said they're looking at off the plan. The majority of them, interestingly, had a more advanced strategy, Brett.
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking at more established type properties and really good to see there the fact that they're considering adding value. I think that's a real trick that some property investors miss out on, particularly, as you said, if you're buying off the plan or brand new, you're kind of missing a bit of a trick there. So that's a really positive outcome that I think will help investors, particularly over the next probably 3 or 4 years where inflation and wages growth and we may not get that heavy lifting that we've seen previously.
So 38% said they'd want to buy a property with the value add potential of renovation or development. Okay, now we always ask each year, where's the best place to invest for capital growth over the next 5 years? Now, it's actually always interesting to go back and look at previous years because investors have been wrong in previous years, but it's interesting to see where they think things are going to move. And Brisbane seems to be the most popular spot this year. And interestingly, it was last year as well. And they were right last year because even though Brisbane hasn't had tremendous growth this year, it actually hasn't had the falls that other capital cities have had. So Brisbane's the place that they believe over the 5-year timeframe, because we don't want quick one-off hotspotting growth, but 42%, a significant percentage, thought Brisbane was the place to be.
That's a good result, but the surprise result for me, Michael, was actually Melbourne at 39%. Clearly, they've gone through a lockdown and there's a bit of uncertainty about how things will come out there, but you think maybe a Sydney or even a Sunshine Coast or something that, if you're listening to the media, may be ahead of that. But, you know, there's obviously a lot of confidence and there's a lot of underlying fundamentals that are still strong in Melbourne and investors are realising that.
What really surprised me was that 11 respondents thought Darwin would have the best capital growth over the next 5 years. And unfortunately, there are very few growth drivers there. I was pleased to see that a really small percentage thought Hobart was going to be the right place. Hobart was the best growth area for the last 5 years. There's no question about it. But it's a very, very small market, which is easily moved and swayed by both positive and negative factors. But if you stick to the big capital cities where there are multiple pillars of growth, you can see what happens even during pandemics, even during recessions. Property values are very resistant. So this was a slightly different question to the next one. Was a bit different to the last one, but the same sort of question. What do you think would make the best investment over the next 5 years, Brett?
Yeah, and clearly the detached house in a suburban block and the middle ring suburbs are really leading the charge, and followed by, again, we spoke about before, a property where we can add some value and potential. The regional comes in at about 12%, and then, you know, pleased to see again that the majority of people are steering away from off the plan and apartments and things like that in the capital cities.
Sure. So it's interesting to understand what's going on in their head. What's the reason for investing? Investing property investment has its ups and downs, its challenges. You could spend the money enjoying your life in the meantime. So why are you going to the trouble of doing this? Interesting to get into the heads of why property investors are doing this. And the answers, Brett?
Yeah, very important. I think probably one of the first things you want to understand when you start investing. So the first one's really important. It's for lifestyle, to have a better lifestyle and more choices for my family. That was clearly 50% of property investors. Then to become a self-funded retiree and retire early and have more choices. So they're really around those. And I guess something that I know is very important to you, Michael, and also myself, is looking after my children. And you've obviously gone past that now and are starting to look after your grandchildren. So that was there as well. And then it kind of went through to, you know, becoming wealthy and supplementing your super and, you know, finishing out there that potentially with pensions and changes to super in the future, the government won't be looking after people at that time frame.
A lot of people could see that they're not going to count on the government to look after them. So that's important. Take your financial future into your own hands. So what is the end game? What are people planning to do, Brett?
Yeah, again, a majority are looking to live off their rental income. That's the vast majority of people. Holding and never selling is key, and especially if you're planning to leave a legacy. We've got 23% there, and some are looking to sell down or all. Living off the equity is getting less and less. That's 11%. That's becoming incredibly difficult with the way the banks are. And again, you know, a lot of people down there at 7% are a little bit unsure about what to do, and maybe a combination of everything. And maybe they're the ones that don't have the plan or the strategy, Michael.
Well, that's a good point, because you have to know what the end game is. And even though there is so much uncertainty about what things are going to be like in 10, 20, 30 years' time when you move into your golden years, the answer is you should have a plan, because you should be building the asset base, the portfolio, to support what your plan is. So sell some down, sell all down. It surprised me that 20% of people thought that was an idea. And what they've forgotten, what they don't know, what the people who teach them that don't remind them, is it doesn't work as well as they think. So if you sold $1 million property and thought, I've got $1 million now to pay off other debt, no, you haven't, because you've probably got an 80% loan to value against that property. Otherwise, you wouldn't be needing to sell it. And then you'd be paying some capital gains tax. So in fact, buying five, selling five down the track and keeping five with no debt, which is a strategy I know some people are putting out there in the marketplace, that doesn't work, does it?
Absolutely not. And we're seeing that really come unstuck, particularly with banking regulations and things like that. And there's obviously, like you said, there's capital gains and agents' fees. It just never really works out as they plan it to, unfortunately. The next one's about buying a home, and look, 58%, the majority of people are probably not, but I suspect most of the people that are investors here are probably already established, and there is 24% that are and 17% that are uncertain, but it's probably not an accurate reflection of our overall market. Would you say that, Michael?
Well, I guess we don't buy new homes every year, but the percentage of people looking at buying a new home went up from 20% last year to 24%. So the fact that a quarter of this population was thinking of buying a new home is still quite a high percentage. whether they're upsizing, downsizing, getting into their first home, we really don't know that. We didn't dig in deep enough for that. But it was important to ask them, well, what's the bank's lending policies doing to you? How's it affecting your ability to purchase another property? And I was actually surprised that 40%, 39% said the bank's tighter lending criteria didn't affect them. So as many people said no as said yes. So I guess it really depends upon their own personal cash flow position, Brett.
Yeah, certainly. You know, a bit of both each way there. Interesting to see that 16% were unsure. That might be an opportunity. I know we talk about analysing your portfolio and getting a portfolio review every year to see how it's performing and things like that. So potentially people aren't doing that every year. They're maybe skipping a few years. So I think that may be something that people could look at updating and allocating each year.
I think that's a great idea because remember we're asking people who already 90% of them had a property portfolio. So if they're treating it like a business, you want to increase the stock in your business, you want to make sure it's working effectively, you're getting the best return on your investment. And the right way to do this is seeing when the next step is to move to the next property. And so for that reason, it is worthwhile sitting down once a year independently with people. I know that's what you and your team at Metropole do with our clients. So it's a portfolio health check. It's understanding, is it working like you expected it to? Is it going to get you to where you want to get to? But I know people have a lot of built up emotion, vested interest. They don't like to hear it when their portfolio is not working as well as it should be.
No, we never like to hear we may have got it wrong, Michael, do we? You know, sometimes it can be a bit difficult for our ego to hear, but, you know, I think all the more reason we should be getting that independent review and taking action on an annual basis rather than waiting perhaps 4 or 5 years when you may have missed the boat.
Well, there's something you can do about it at times. Maybe you've got to just do up your property, improve it. I mean, one thing you can't move, change, improve is the location. So if it's a dud property in a bad location, unfortunately, sometimes you've got to make that decision of selling. I know that you and your team don't make those decisions lightly, so it's not on gut feel, but you've got to do the numbers, the figures and the spreadsheet and see if you actually took a hit financially, the costs of moving, paying some capital gains tax or not, how long would it take to recoup that and what would it look like 5-10 years later? So you've got to take a step back or 2 steps back to move a few steps forward. That's a bit hard to do without running the numbers and figures properly, Brett.
Yeah, that's right, Michael, 100%. And I guess leading into that, the next question is what is the biggest stumbling block to purchasing a property or to purchasing your next property? And we did talk about loan serviceability there. That's about 29%. Interestingly, 26% don't have a major obstacle. And I guess the next one is, you know, saving for a deposit or being uncertain about the market. So some interesting findings there.
Well, the loan serviceability has been the big issue. So as you said right at the beginning of this chat, that the percentage of investors in the market currently is the lowest it's ever been, and it's down to about the same percentage as first home buyers. Hasn't been like that for a long, long time. The number of first home buyers are up, owner-occupiers are up. But I think the investors are not in the market in general, not because they're nervous, not because they're scared, but the banks are checking their serviceability criteria very carefully. They've got those forensic investigations, and we jokingly say they look at the Uber Eats bill and things like that, but it's actually true. So they're wanting to see what their discretionary spending is and can they afford it. And so difficulty with serviceability is even worse since the Haines Royal Commission, but Treasurer Josh Frydenberg's mentioned that in March next year, they're going to loosen the purse strings and the average investor is going to be able to borrow considerably more because they're not going to dig in as deeply. They're going to recognize that if you take on a loan, you are going to give up some of that discretionary spending. So, yeah, you may order Uber Eats a couple of times a week. You may go on holidays. But if you take the average Australian who takes on a financial commitment, they're responsible. They're just not going to spend as much. They'll cut back a bit. But that's not taken into account in the calculators at the moment. But next year, it'll be easier. Of course, what that means is if the average investor or home buyer can suddenly borrow 70, 100, 150,000 more, there's been a number of figures bandied around, what are they going to do? They're going to spend it, and that's going to push up property values. So in my mind, there's a window of opportunity before that happens. If you've got the ability, if you've got a secure job, now's a good time to get in, Brett.
Certainly is. Obviously, with those types of things changing, interest rates have come down again. One thing we probably haven't talked about yet is the consumer confidence is starting to tick up again as well, Michael, and that's really ramped up in the last couple of months. And I only see that trend continuing as we start to come out of lockdown around the country.
Well, the consumers who responded to this survey, and again, they're savvy consumers, they were very, very confident. But if you looked in general in the community, some people are hurting. Some people are still having a difficult time. And others are waiting for somebody to ring the bell and say, hey, we've hit the bottom. The market's moving up. But if you look at auction clearance results, if you look at the number of properties for sale, if you look at the number of sales that are occurring, if you see what's happening to prices, we're past the bottom in most segments of the market. The off-the-plan market, some of the new properties, some of the new house and land packages, they've still got some tough times ahead. But in the big capital cities all around Australia, no one rang the bell, but we're past the bottom. And again, more good news is going to come and it feeds on itself. The next question was, is it a good time to fix interest rates? Now, this was before the last interest rate drop.
A few people may have got it wrong, Michael.
Well, 47% of people said it was a good time. Interestingly, a similar percentage said it last year, thinking we were down the bottom of the cycle, and interest rates dropped again a little bit. It's unlikely they're going to drop anymore. But I heard today, Brett, of somebody who got a home loan with a one in front of it, a fixed rate 4-year home loan with a one in front of it. Who would have thought that? So is it a good time to fix interest rates? I think 32% said no. If they would have answered the question today after this last interest rate drop, I think a higher percentage would have said no. So the next one's interesting. What do you think is going to happen to property prices? And despite 74% of people being very positive, despite 50% of people saying they're going to buy an investment property, they had realistic expectations. They didn't think that they're going to be a boom, which meant that they had long-term views, Brett. So 29% thought there'd be an increase of 0 to 5%, and 19% thought property values would be steady. So when you look at it that way, close to half of them didn't see boom conditions, but still saw a good time, a window of opportunity to get in. Only 4% thought property values would increase more than 10%. I think that's optimistic for the next 12 months. 9% thought property prices would, 12% thought property prices would increase 5 to 10%. But most were realistic, had realistic expectations, but still took a long-term view. That's good.
That's positive, Michael, yeah.
So what were their concerns, Brett? What was their biggest concerns?
Well, clearly something we get as well is the ability to keep accessing finance. So finance has obviously been a stumbling block. And getting back to one of the points we raised before, Michael, the ability to buy five properties in 5 years is well and truly gone. It's just not achievable these days. So that was a 36%. Not getting sufficient capital growth is 29%, which is quite interesting. I think we spoke a little bit about that also. And also the current economic climate, including the recession, they're probably a little bit unsure about the next few months and how things are going to pan out as well. And that was on 29% as well. So that were the top three. Prolonged vacancies was something that few investors may be concerned about if rents aren't being paid and things like that. But again, falling property values, cash flow on their portfolio and job security starts to round it out around that 20% mark.
So what the most common concern of property investors were, as you said, was the ability to access finance to grow their portfolio. And we all, under the current finance regulations, have a finance ceiling. There's only that much that the banks are going to lend us. Each of us has got a different finance ceiling, but it's different to the old days. So if you have a limited borrowing capacity, you've got to make sure that your return on your money that you've borrowed and on your investments is as high as possible. So you've got to buy the best properties that you can afford. Accessing finance will get a bit easier next year. But again, even if you have got a bigger borrowing capacity, there is still going to be a limit to what you can borrow. And that's why, as you said a moment ago, you can't buy five properties in 5 minutes. You can't buy five good ones. So therefore, make sure that you own the best assets you can. Now, interestingly, not surprisingly, because this comes up every year, when we ask them, who do you seek for advice? The fact that they are a sophisticated audience of property investors, 41% said they'd seek advice from a strategic advisor, a property strategist, which is good. What concerns me is 11% said they'd seek advice from an estate agent. And we know, because we deal with estate agents most days, while they're very nice and very professional people, and both you and I've got a real estate license, most estate agents don't understand about investment. And when you dig down deeper, most don't even have an investment property. So be careful who you ask. Don't ask your estate agent. Don't ask your accountant. A lot of people are going to ask accountants. Accountants are there for advising on tax and compliance.
And depreciation, which is something we get asked about, isn't
it? Mortgage brokers, a lot of people are going to ask their mortgage broker. They're not in the position to give you advice. Interestingly, though, and we've seen it, mortgage brokers, accountants, financial planners all have a vested interest. Sorry. I shouldn't say they all do, but those who advise often do, because they get a commission, a kickback. And that's why you'll find people who go and ask advice of those professionals who are very good at their own individual area. But when they start to give advice, they're going to send you to people who are going to sell you new projects, because that's how they get commissions. They can't get commissions in other ways, can they?
No, that's right. And Michael, the other interesting one there is the rise of the buyer's agent. And I believe that probably the majority of buyer's agents are just order takers and probably don't have the perspective at ground level. We've seen them kind of coming out of the woodwork, and you can kind of work out the back of your house now. And you know, I guess it's probably dangerous to just trust that single person. And again, good to see the majority of people actually getting that strategic advice from a specialist.
Yeah, so that's actually a good point, because a number of people said they're going to ask a buyer's agent, and that's probably because they don't realise what a buyer's agent's role is. So to be blunt, you started off as a client of Metropole a couple of decades ago, you became a buyer's agent, you became a property strategist, now you're my business partner. Buyer's agents have an important role, but their job is to implement the strategy put together by a strategist. Because if you ask a buyer's agent in Perth, where should I buy, or in Adelaide or Canberra, or even in our big capital cities, they only know their area, their patch. They may say, oh, I can buy interstate, but if they do, they fly in, they fly out. And I know your team have a little giggle when people fly in and fly out of Brisbane to buy a property, Brett.
Yeah, absolutely. It happens all the time. And mate, a really interesting point you just raised there, Michael, you mentioned Perth, and I had a client that has built a substantial portfolio in Perth in the last 10 years, and there's a buyer's agent over there that I'm sure they do a fantastic job, but they haven't had the diversification, they haven't had the the interest, and they've lost out on huge opportunities. Their portfolio has dropped around 20%. And when they're looking at the research at Sydney, Brisbane and Melbourne, they could be 40, 50, 60% ahead, and it's really taken its toll. So that independence and that level of perspective is vital before you actually get to that buyer's agent.
Very much so. So buyer's agents definitely have their role, but also, like everything else, there are buyer's agents and buyer's agents. Most people don't understand that, in fact, you can get a real estate license and a buyer's agent's license in 3 or 4 days. There are people who are being taught to be buyer's agents out there at the moment. There's an organization that encourages people to be buyer's agents. And these are enthusiastic amateurs. They're very nice people. They've got the best intentions. But they're taught you can do it part-time. You can do it on the side. Do you really, with such a big investment, want to be represented?
We're talking about potentially $500,000, $1 million that we're trusting in the hands of someone who is, maybe a project manager in construction or an accountant, 3 weeks ago, and they've pulled the switch and now they're a buyer's agent. It's incredibly, incredibly concerning.
Now, we're going on about this, and some people are going to say, hey, you've got a vested interest. And the answer is, yes, we do. Our vested interest is actually in helping clients. So if you sit with Brett and his team of property strategists at Metropole, whether you want to buy in Melbourne, Sydney, Brisbane, makes no difference to us. Whether you want to buy a house, an apartment, whether you want to get involved in a development or renovation, makes no difference to us, because we have a breadth of experience. But before you even buy a property, we start with putting a strategic plan together for you. We make sure you've got the right finance capacity. We make sure that you've got the right ownership structures. That's what's going to be necessary moving forward. So despite this huge enthusiasm of this group of people, Brett, you actually can't do it on your own. You need the right team on your side. And that's why I'm shamelessly putting a plug in for our team at Metropole, because of the depth and the perspective that we offer. So if you're interested in having a chat with our team, just go to metropole.com.au and have a chat with Brett or one of the other property strategists to help you. Now, let's finish off with who took this survey. So interestingly, 74% of the people who took the survey were male. Now, of the readership of our investment property magazine and Property Update, there's a combination of males and females. So why would more males, so many more males, do this? And when I asked my wife, Pam, she said that's because their wives told them to do so.
That's a good point.
And maybe that's true. When you looked at the age group, it's the same every year, so it doesn't surprise me. It is an older age group. 30% were 40 to 49, 18% were 50 to 59. There was only a small group, 4%, 20 to 29. So in general, we're talking to here, we're getting the thoughts of people who've been around the block a couple of times. Still, some of them hadn't invested in property, but it's, I think, worthwhile understanding where they're coming from. And the other interesting thing, it wasn't a mandatory question, not everybody had to answer that, was that a large percentage of them, when you looked at their household income, so the combined income, and this would also include their property income, and we saw many were cash flow positive, 35% had over 200,000, 19% had 150,000 to 200,000 a year. So we're talking with some reasonably affluent people. So if that's the way they think and you want to become affluent, I think it's a good idea to have a listen to what they're thinking about. So some interesting trends there, Brett. And as I said at the beginning of this, at the introduction to this podcast, we've got a link in the show notes so you can get the whole survey and understand what's going on. What was your big takeaway from this, Brett?
Yeah, probably back to the start there, Michael. I think the fact that, you know, there's some positivity. It's been a tough year. It's been an incredibly tough year. So the fact that we've still got a great deal of positivity to head into next year, although they're also realistic, they're not expecting anything crazy. They're predicting, you know, 0 to 5% or the market being steady, but they're still very interested in investing in property. It looks like they're choosing the right kind of properties. The majority want to look for established properties and potentially something where they can add some value. So I think that's a real positive as well, particularly given the market will be a bit subdued with growth and wages and inflation. So some real positives coming out of that.
I'm pleased to see those results as well, because despite what interest rates are, despite what's happening to the economy, consumer confidence is one of the biggest drivers of the property markets, because it's actually the combination of a whole lot of factors. You feel more confident if you've got job security. You feel more confident if you've got a secure income coming in, and if the banks are going to lend you more money. So consumer confidence is an important factor that was missing for part of this year. So it looks like we're going to have a great year in 2021, Brett.
Yeah, really looking forward to it, Michael. I think once we start getting through this year, if we can start next year with a bit of positivity, we've got interest rates down, APRA will start loosening regulations, and, you know, I see a real positive start to 2021.
So if you've been listening to this podcast and you're one of the people who actually completed the survey, thank you very much. There was one person who won a 12-month mentorship program with me. I'm always pleased to give that. And that was Julia Illies from Queensland, and there were five people who won a pack of three of my books. And again, thank you for all of those who just left your details. It took a little bit of time, and we'll be doing this again once a year. And it'll be interesting when we sit back this time next year, Brett, to see if people's thoughts about where the property market was going to head were right or not.
Always good to chat, Michael, and always good to have some information there we can follow up on.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks again.
Well, there was lots of information in today's show, but if you want the results of the survey, there'll be a link in the show notes. The big takeaway is that, in general, property investors are feeling confident and are going to get into the market, particularly when finance becomes more easily available. But a big lesson from past downturns is that when more people get into the market, and some get a little bit exuberant, some get excited, they're fearing they're missing out because they're seeing the market moving on, they make mistakes. The property market won't be doing the heavy lifting for lots of investors moving forward because they're going to buy the wrong sort of properties or in the wrong locations. So twice a week in the Michael Yardney podcast and daily in my property update newsletter, I'm going to keep informing you, as will lots of other experts, about where to invest to outperform the averages. Now, if you've got some benefit from today's show, why not tell somebody about it? Let's make as many property investors or would-be investors as financially fluent as possible. And if you'd like to tell the world about it, why not leave a review on iTunes or Spotify or Stitcher or wherever you listen to this podcast? And if I read your review out, I'd be happy to say thank you by gifting you one of my books. I'll be back real soon, but you can catch me in between on social media. Just look for Michael Yardney. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?